I was very vulnerable, and I was extremely sensitive. But what it really was creating my own fortress and protecting it. So the ego was protecting this pileup of objects that ended up being this emotional story of your life.
Creative engagement. Hello, I'm your host, Daniel Mandel, and I invite you to join us at the intersection of artistry and engagement. I'll be shining a light on the importance of authentic self-expression and participation in life. My purpose is to stimulate curiosity that will lead to play so that we can all live our most meaningful adventure. I'm a creativity coach, and I'm the chief encouragement officer. I work with people as creators and as artists to generate change through curiosity and imagination that invites creativity into problem solving to address life challenges. My guest this episode is Scott Holloway, an artist and a fellow Billy. What strikes me is how Scott, as a self-trained artist, poured his experiences and his feelings into his work. He didn't need to formally study or prepare in order to receive the benefits of his art. Also, Scott is obviously a very visual thinker, and his descriptions evoke vivid mental images and ideas. Scott also speaks openly about his Parkinson's experiences. I so appreciate Scott's willingness to be interviewed and together with me to discuss through language how his artistic expression helps release his demons and not become as attached to his thoughts. Scott was very willing to talk about some very dark aspects of his experiences. I hear the deep, profound insights that live in Scott as a result of his years of developing his visual artistic language. If you're in the San Francisco area, be sure to check out Scott's solo show, showing some of his paintings at MAG Galleries, June 23rd through July 30th. For details, see this episode notes. And I'm also adding a new feature of a transcript to this episode. I want to share a new workshop I've created called Activating Creativity and invite you to participate. Whether you find yourself stuck or just wanting to add some extra inspiration, this workshop is a great way to engage your ideas and learn more about your creative mind. To find out more, visit www.danielrmandel.com. At the end of this episode, I'm sharing a song of mine, The Gardener and the Tall Man. I'm very thrilled to introduce our guest, an artist, Scott Holloway, to the Creative Engagement Podcast. Welcome, Scott.
Thank you. It's a new experience for me.
We got connected in a couple ways, actually. We are both members of the Billies, and very recently, Joe Arcangelini recommended that I contact you. So special thanks to Joe. Let's just get started and give people a way to get to know you, Scott. What has creativity, and especially activating and engaging with your creativity, what has that experience been like for you in your life?
I think, you know, when I was young, very young, my family was very scattered all the time and moved around every year practically, all over the country. And so I was always the new kid in school, and I was very shy because I was emotionally so transparent or felt I was. And so I built this facade around me that was my drawings and my paintings. And so I started drawing and painting at a young age. And then I got a book on the teaching of Paul Klee. I sent away to Germany to have this limited edition journal of his teaching journal, sent to me. And it took, before the internet, you know, it took 4 months, I think, to get this book. And so I pored over this book because page by page, it would explain, you know, here's a point, and here's a point, and this is a line. You know, if you add a line over here, it makes a triangle. And if you pile up triangles, it looks like a city. You know, he just described the architecture of drawing and making from point to line to building to city. You know, he's fantastic teacher. So he inspired me greatly.
Just through that book, you kind of used that to start to learn the elements of drawing and painting.
Well, I knew of them, but he was able to, you know, there was a book he wrote called Concerning the Spiritual and Art, or maybe that was Kandinsky, I can't remember. But anyway, the Blue Writer Almanacs, the series, that came along at the same time the Tao Te Ching, and was popular reading in those days, the teachings of the Tao. They believe the Chinese is translated differently now, but back then it was called the Tao. And I had this, you know, big book that had bamboo leaves on one side, and it was scenes of the ocean or calligraphy, and the other side would be these sayings from the Tao philosophy. I had that in an I Ching, and I'd throw the I Ching disc. And so I would use them as spiritual guidelines and as a way to think about problems that existed in abstract terms. It gave me a sense of place that I could carry with me, which was through this exploration of art.
What age were you when you started to pay attention to the Tao?
Now, I was about 16. There's a wonderful bookstore in Hermosa Beach that stepped down a hillside. And each little storefront would have this sort of rattan grass mat flooring and had big paper ball lamps like the Gucci. It was it's called the Either Or Bookstore on one of these steps going down the hill. And I would sit there all day long and read these books. And I would buy a few of them as I could. And it's called The Western Man's Guide to the I Ching. It had quotes from famous authors. And so whenever I would get stuck, I would throw these coins and do these hexagrams, you know, all of John Cage before I knew of John Cage. And that would, you know, that whatever it said was, you know, the king, in Chinese, it would be the king's warriors went over the mountain, and in Western translation would be, you know, it's time to go over the mountain and stuck here, you know. So I'd unstick myself emotionally with it as a tool.
It's interesting as you were describing the bookstore, even your words are you create a very visual image with your words of the steps going down and the textures of things. So I can tell that you are your visual field must bring you a lot of information artistically.
Yes, yeah. I have 30% of everyone is a visual thinker as opposed to a thinking from language. And language to me is second and visual is first. So, you know, when I was thinking of this talk, I was visualizing everything. It was very hard not to visualize it all. You know, and then I finally realized that I could visualize it, but I didn't need to set it up like a stage, which is what I usually do, is set the stage. With the Billies, I would create these big tent environments with fountains and turning chandeliers and lights and bells and fans, and I'd create these little spaces for people to recline and retreat or have conversation or, you know, so I would create these whole environments. And that's one of the problems with creativity is when you're painting, you're creating an object. And then it's like, what do you do with this object? And then over years, you've got lots of objects. So unless you make them commodities, which is what we would do in our culture, you know. But I, since my path was so personal, I didn't realize that there was a language I was building, or that there was a way to describe, or that people could actually look at my work and understand it. But as over the years, that friends have seen my work, they understand what the dialogue is and what's going on. They can see it separately from me, and they can appreciate it.
Can you say some more about this? Is fascinating. Are you saying that over a series of pictures, they tell a story? Or do you have an example of what the language might suggest?
Yeah, let's see. What it is that it's self-created. I didn't go to a university and learn art theory and create a piece based on, you know, the succession of art history. I just made stuff. And then I'd come back and go, oh, you know, that's interesting. And then I'd go back at it again. Or often music would be playing. Big symphonies and, you know, stuff that I would be dancing and painting at the same time in the studio. But it was such my own language, and I was so protective around it, it became this identity. So at one point, a teacher said to me, I've been thinking about you. I don't think you should be an artist. She said, I think you should be an art critic. Because I was so opinionated. And so, you know, heavy, especially on myself. You know, I was like, this is art, this is not art, you know. So, because it's an illustration in a book, it's not like fine art, you know, capital F-A. You know, I was such a snob. But what it really was creating my own fortress and protecting it. So the ego was protecting this pileup of objects that ended up being this emotional story of your life.
Yeah.
So the teachers would leave me alone. They'd see how you know, I'd be like, you know, don't touch me. Don't comment on my work. This is my creation.
It's interesting. The relationship you created with your art and the importance of it to you sounds like it needed some protection.
Well, I was very vulnerable.
Yeah.
And I was extremely sensitive. And both my parents were alcoholics, drama happening all the time with my family. So I'd be moved and moved and moved and moved and moved. And my sister and I sort of formed this bond. And then the artwork I could take with me, you know. So that was my, you know, here's my anger and here's my boyfriend and here's my family, and here's my uncle that hates me because I'm gay. And, you know, all that was painted into, and I didn't understand what a lot of it was. One example I have is I call it The Night Watch, is a new painting, but it's based on an old thing of the demons coming to rest in the middle of the night. With Parkinson's especially, there's this thing where this blackness descends upon you and you're asleep. But the blackness is so real that you believe everything is evil. Like, you're manipulating me for this reason, and Joe's manipulating me for that reason. And, you know, it's real paranoid and really dark. So I have to tell myself that this is just a floating construct, and using my Buddhist training, you know, this is just this cloud, the black cloud that's going by, and it's not the truth. It'll be gone in the morning when you wake up. Often I have to get up and just read or something, or eat something, because it's been so disturbing. So initially I do this painting, you know, and I do all these creatures coming out of the darkness. But then I began to make friends with them, and they began to be old friends, again, using my Buddhist training. These demons, I've got them sheepishly, you know, looking at you from this painting, you know, oh, there they are again. They think they're so scary.
It's fascinating to hear. How do you feel that, like, expressing that visual aspect it sounds like it goes beyond something like, oh, it's therapeutic.
Yeah.
But there is some, there's something that the expression of creating that painting and expressing it, that it did for you. What do you think how do you understand, or do you just kind of trust that it's in service of something higher? Or
higher is a dangerous word. It's placing a hierarchy.
I that was a leading question.
Yeah.
How do you hold it, I guess, that what does it mean to you to be able to express those things that otherwise, if left unexpressed, would kind of be problematic?
Well, it helps release them. But the, part of it, I'd say a third of it is the Buddhist training. There's this cloud of thought coming by. I'm horny, or I'm scared shitless because the demons are there, or indifferent, whichever thing floats up, just to let them go by and not become attached to them. I would walk down the street when I was younger, and I was so vulnerable that I realized I began to create this walking meditation where I put all my focus on the wind, whatever the air was doing. That would be where all my attention was. And that allowed me to ground myself so I could walk to work and not feel like everyone was looking at me. So I had this sort of defensive radar set up that was always on the lookout for whatever was around me to make everything okay. I had to make everything okay. So this unraveling through Buddhist practice and through work, the painting. And I have to include the gardening in that also. I was a landscape designer for many years, but a lot of the painting has to do with the plants, which has to do with, they all connect together.
I'm so fascinated by everything you're saying. I'm trying to take it all in. Earlier, you mentioned that you had music playing and you were even dancing as part of your creation process.
Yes.
And so what is that about? Is it just that the moving around helps you think, and does the music inform what you're creating? Or it sounds very immersive to be creating that way.
Yeah. It's you're really gone. You go into it and you're just gone. And what a lot of the painting is about immersion and about movement, and there are lots of layers to that movement. So you're looking through these layers that are moving, and you're it's like you're composing on a chess set that's seven layers deep or something. You've got all the different layers moving, and you're trying to connect them all together. I would have moments in Buddhist practice in meditation retreats where I could visualize the last 20 years of the Billy Club and why everything happened at every moment, see that as a structure, as resonance. And this rug down below my feet here, the pattern on it has resonance. It's not just a pattern of a rug. The pattern is true existence, is the same thing. It's hard to describe.
Yeah. No, I'm getting a sense of just how deeply you're considering these aspects and their relationships.
Yes, I mean, it's not, people just say, oh, you paint, how much do you make, they turn it into a commodity right away. And that's just our cultural training,
Sure, yeah.
It's like coming out again. It's like you're being turned inside out. And you're being completely exposed to this, whatever the audience is that comes through looking, It's like there I am. I used to think of like Francis Bacon, on a meat hanging on a hook. There's Scott up on the wall.
Just literally on display.
Yeah. So for a long time, I would. I would self-destruct these opportunities that came along, especially when I was younger. I would have this director, this curator, this person say, you know, well, why don't you give me some starter drawings of say, the opera figures from the operas in San Francisco at the Opera House. You know, but I'd say, oh, yeah, I can do that. And then I would be hands over my head, you know, totally withdrawn, in total misery, because I couldn't possibly do that. I couldn't possibly do that. So that my family teaching was that I should be a doctor and not an artist. And you know, so there was this big negative context to putting it out to view. So the question became, you know, who is this art for? That was a big question. You know, who am I painting for? You know, and it's like, well, I'm painting for myself. This is, you know, I didn't sit back and say, oh, this is my story. Or, and then I, you know, protected all these art. And then pretty soon, you know, I'm stacked up to the ceiling, and it's like, you know, I'm turning 70, and it's like, what do you do with them all? You know, I threw away 100 of them once, and I always regretted it because I didn't photograph them and I didn't know where to throw them away. But we were moving and I needed to let go of the black books.
Yeah, we don't necessarily get trained in how to answer the questions of sometimes art it is for the public and sometimes art is very personal and not meant for public consumption.
Yes.
How do you make sense of when something is not to be shown at all, but just for the expression of it purely?
That's come up. That's an interesting thing. Like, I showed him some paintings that were really edgy to show because they were that vulnerable. And one of them, very painful to even talk about, but it's a self-portrait of my chewing off my foot. And it's in the middle of the AIDS crisis. And everyone is dying, and my best friend's dying, and I'm going crazy. And I feel like I should just die along with everybody else because I don't deserve to live. So it's sort of like self-hatred and just all that darkness, all of the horror of that time, you know, coming to bear in one painting. And he loved it. He thought it was great. You know, he wants to show it. So that to me is... But it's just time to let go of that stuff, you know. I did a monumental, this 30-foot-long painting that's about 10 feet high that is the end of the epidemic. And it's got these bodies submerged underneath in the ground, and they're with the rocks and with the roots of the plants. And then new life is coming out from that. You know, it's like the compost for the new life. You know, it's time to stop mourning and time to let go of that and time to move on with our lives, you know, and not forget those and not remember them and celebrate them as ancestors. Let the light in, let's open the curtains. Like,
kind of reframing everything that's gone on. And
yeah,
I can hear in your responses and how it's impacting you. And then for someone to come along and say, I'd like to show that piece because it maybe seems stimulating to them.
Yeah. I think he gets it. I don't quite understand his entire plan yet, but I trust him.
Is there anything that you want to say about Parkinson's specifically?
It's sort of a creeping disease. So it creeps up on you piece by piece. My friend says it's the gift that keeps on taking, you know, and it happens very gradually. But at this point, my ability to walk is being put into question because I've had two incidences where I've not been able to even hop one step forward. And I've been in so much pain if my foot touches the ground. And my muscles are all spasming up and down my left side, that I've been completely debilitated, you know. And I, in healing from that, which took about 5 days, I pulled around my Eames office chair around the house one day, and rolled around the house, which connected with wheelchairs, which was just really, was really difficult. Because I'm a hiker and a backpacker. That's what my identification was. That's what I love doing, is being way out in nature and alone and with, precious few friends and just out there. So from that to not being able to walk, for 10 years I facilitated a circle of people that changed greatly over time. But it started with mainly gay men, and then it grew from there. So we had a meditation, and then we had sort of a tea, which is sort of like a social time. And then we had a heart circle, basically, which I took from the Billies and the Fairies, and I applied it to Parkinson's. So it was only for people with Parkinson's. And so we all would walk into the room, and we just all go, we could let down whatever we did to cover it up,
Beautiful, yeah.
Yeah.
In terms of words of encouragement for people who are maybe hearing what you're describing and thinking about their own ability to communicate vulnerable things and not quite sure about how to get engaged or activate their own creativity, what words of encouragement would you have for folks?
I guess it would be that what you create is your own. It's not to worry about, I can't draw, or there's a lot of negative things associated with it. I'm not musically inclined. Creativity is a state of mind. It's a mindset. It's like, put in the music, do whatever you need to do to set yourself aside so you can let it come through your fingers and life will find a way through, It has nothing to do with me. It's the energy moving through that creates the object. Just let it go. Let go a lot. Keep letting go.
That's beautiful. Yeah.
When I'm speaking, I'm visualizing at the same time. It's like I used to think something was wrong with me, because whenever I'm introduced to a person, I'm seeing your facial movements and what you're wearing and everything connected with you visually. And the name is so abstract to me. It always flies out of my head. And always being the new kid in school, I was, seeing all the visuals, and I never remembered anybody's name. I still have a hard time with it.
Yeah, I think that's just Scott Holloway's way of being very visual. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to have all of your links and information. And I should mention that you have a showing at the MAG Galleries.
MAG Galleries.
MAG Galleries.
Yeah.
Coming up June 23rd through July 30th. And yeah. So we'll have all this in the episode notes. I find you absolutely fascinating. I just want to thank you so much for your willingness to participate and be interviewed. Thank you, Scott.
Thank you, Daniel. It's really fun.
The air had grown spines that burned and froze. Yes, I've been pierced by some of those. The face beneath the mask, the slight behind the eyes, the shame within naming the source of all the lies. Our shadows grew long and pooled together. We lingered there, choosing whether to set up shop.
ground. This ire would require more air, more fuel for the fire. More coals to dig for deep in the ground, to pile higher. What goes without saying goes with resentment. You lashed out in anger, but I know that you meant it. Our shadows grew long and pooled together, and we lingered there, choosing weather to set up shop or burn the place to the ground. Sharper than glass. Not fit for our lungs, more solid than gas. Neither one could take a breath, looking out in sharp relief from what you said of what you felt. You didn't get just what you need. Our shadows grew long and pooled together, and we lingered there, choosing weather to set up shop or burn the ground.
The Creative Engagement Podcast's mission is to have important conversations sharing LGBTQ+ artist, community leader, and creative stories as we encourage everyone to participate in life. Here are some ways you can help. Give our podcast some love. Creative Engagement is an independent, free podcast. Please follow Creative Engagement where you listen to podcasts. Your ratings and comments can help others understand the value. Send your questions and feedback to coach@danielrmandel.com. Share this episode with anyone who you think might enjoy artistic and creative ideas and encouragement. And finally, visit the Creative Engagement website, which is www.danielrmandel.com, to explore courses and coaching to optimize your life. Thank you for listening. I'm Daniel Mandel.
Creative Engagement.